On radio. On radio. More of the good stuff. CliffCentral.com.
That life. All about lifestyle, relationships, cause, and get. From Cassie to the bird.
From Cassie to the bird.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Black Life. We're talking about money, and I love that Usher song because Usher brings it and he tells the truth about it. He doesn't mind if you dance on a pole. That's how you make your money, as long as it's about that money, money, money. I love
and that
song.
And how many money songs are there?
How many money songs are there?
I mean, you start Googling it, you get all kinds of drug money. Yeah, lots.
Drug money songs. Yeah, that must be millions of drug
raps,
money songs.
Yeah. Right?
But has anyone rapped about being a banker? Have you ever heard, yo, I work at Standard Bank, and that's how I thank when I'm at the desk?
No.
I pull up with my tank. Okay.
Hey, anyway. Mesh, I think we've just unearthed another talent of yours, eh?
Yeah.
Or not.
Eh? Or not. Don't play hate, man.
But anyway, welcome to the show.
I can give compliments when they do.
Don't worry. You know what? I've got something for you. I'm gonna give you an Afrikaans rap in a couple of minutes. But first of all, I just want to say hello to the fellas. How are you guys doing? Well, first of all, hello to you, the beautiful,
hello.
The blonde and the beautiful Vilmarie.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you.
That's your new title, by the way.
What? Blonde and Beautiful?
The Blonde and the Beautiful. That's your show.
The Double B.
The Double B. That would so be. Sweet.
If only. No, stop looking. I saw you looking at my chest.
The Double B's. I was like, okay. Is that what? No, I didn't. Actually, I wasn't. I was looking at the guest.
Yeah.
Like, it is on the chest.
Guess what? What? Is it B, C, A?
It's a Double B, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, in the studio today, we got the gentleman, Mr. Pat Kuzwa. How are you doing?
Good on yourself, Mesh. Happy Friday, my brother.
Happy Friday to you too, my brother.
Vilmarie, hello again.
Hello.
And I'm not looking at your double Bs.
Thank you.
You know, I'm just surprised. That,
keep it up. Keep the eyes. Yeah.
I'll keep it at eye level.
Thank you.
And of course, we got my man, Swari. How are you doing?
I'm good, Swari. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. So the reason why we had those money songs is actually because of you. Every time you come into the studio, we got to think about money. We got to take things very, very seriously.
Do you have lots?
Yeah, I'm on my way.
Good.
I got family to support, so I got to make that money.
Yeah, you better. And
well, that's a big thing.
To be
ashamed
of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People don't. They just make family. They don't think of the support bit. So
that comes first. Family. You know, you got to make the money first, then make the family. So you can support the family you've made.
So we can listen to you because you have some.
Well, the idea is really listen to what I have to say about the money which we've given to government for government to spend to us.
Well, it was an interesting thing talking about money. This week, we heard about the budget. Mr. Nene came out and he told us about the budget. What we can expect is if you drink or smoke, or drive, you're just going to be taxed more. So if you have money, I mean, I was, you know, quite disappointed with the tax rate going up.
Well, what kills me is why they call it sin tax. They've got to rename that.
Yeah, they got to.
But it's
angel
tax
pleasure tax.
I think it's quite spot on.
Hey, for sinful behavior.
Yes.
You get tax.
I can imagine. I think, you know, maybe they should legalize certain things. You know, can you imagine the sin tax on like prostitution? They could charge whatever they want.
Oh, coming to think of it, do they tax those guys?
No, they don't.
How do you know?
Well, because
I that was so quick.
He does research, yeah.
It's something that actually has been spoken about, that perhaps it's a good idea to, like in certain other countries around the world, like for example the Netherlands, where it is legalized, in places like, I think it's Sweden or Norway, where it's legalized as well. It does make...
What is legalized?
Prostitution.
Prostitution.
It does, like Asha said, I don't care how you make that money, just make that money. What it does is, first of all, it opens up a more, it makes it more safe for everybody participating in it, because people are going to do it anyway. It's the oldest profession. Before people were doctors and lawyers, that's what they did. They make it legal, and then obviously because it's taxed, there's certain legislation, and there's places where you go to do this thing, so the girls are safer, the men are safer. Obviously people get tested more often, they have certificates. It's there's structure, there's scales, all sorts of things.
Nice way of making it okay.
They professionalize it. Before you know it, there's seminars on how to...
Syntax.
How to get more clients or work with what you got, because you only got one girl, so make it count, you know.
How to maximize your profits.
50 Shades of Texas.
50 Shades of Texas, huh? Yes. Yeah, well, so, yeah, the tax situation at the moment for South Africans, well, in a way it's good because obviously we're carrying a big burden. We're becoming more of a social welfare country. The welfare grants have gone up. Yeah. If you are a pensioner, it's gone up from 1,350 to 1,430 if you are over 75 and 1,410, I think.
Yeah.
If you're under 75. Child grants, I think around 390 now per child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. About 50 Rand or so. Yeah.
If you're thinking of adopting, it's 860 Rand per month per child. So that's a viable option.
That they give you.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. See, the major challenge I think the country has, of course, is that there's just far too many people who are heavily dependent on social services versus the people who are paying the taxes.
Yes.
So if you balance the scales, eventually you're going to have a tipping point.
Yeah.
You're going to have a tipping point.
So that's
the major problem. In addition to that, you have in this country institutions which are supposed to be making an income for the country, like SAA.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay.
Like Eskom.
Okay.
And those institutions, they're supposed to be business.
Yeah.
And they're all going year after year on a loss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, if you are running a business and your business keeps making a loss, eventually
you'll just be out of business.
You're out of business.
You don't get any more bonuses.
Yes. Yes. and so this is the issue. These very institutions that are supposed to be making us money are, in fact, burning a hole in our pockets.
Mm. Look, and it's not just a small hole, eh? I mean, I heard that it was reported that 28 or 25 billion was needed for Eskom. And then we had an analyst come on board saying, those figures are way understated. But something in the region of 250 or 280 billion.
But here's the thing, guys. When we talk about Eskom, I mean, we're going to talk, I want us to talk about SAA and possibly SABC for a very short time as well. But when we talk about Eskom, a lot of that spend is not to bail Eskom out as much as it is to do the infrastructure work that was supposed to have been done decades ago. Eskom was never going to be able to sustain the country's energy needs post-apartheid anyway, because it was never built for the entire country. It was built for a very few people. Yeah. And we were supposed to have spent that money, we were supposed to have spent that money already where we had more power stations, and we spent time dilly-dallying, considering, do we go nuclear power? Do we still go coal power? I think not maintaining as well, which costs a lot of money. Because in the meantime, the thing with not maintaining is, if you look at all the global warming and those sort of things, maintaining some of those power stations that were coal run, for us was in the long run not going to be such a good thing for the environment. So it was, are we now going to go nuclear? And if we do go nuclear, how do we contain that so we don't have a situation that happened in Japan, so on and so forth?
Look, the 23 billion that they're providing right now for this budget is in fact to bail out Eskom.
Okay. Mm.
To build up a power station, you're going to need far more than 23 billion.
My bad.
That is to really to bail out Eskom.
Okay.
The problem that Eskom,
what does bailing out mean?
Well, it simply means that if they don't get that money, they won't be able to pay salaries. Period.
So it's basically just keeping the staff running.
It's keeping operations running.
That's hectic.
And that's where they currently are.
So it's not even productive.
It's pretty short term. But see, the problem with Eskom is this: you have a number of municipalities who Eskom gives electricity to for them to on sell to people in those municipalities, and those municipalities are not paying Eskom the money. Eskom is owed currently over 10 billion by municipalities. 10 billion that they don't currently hope to even recover, because there's fear you cut off the electricity from those municipalities, then there will be riots.
But here's my thing. People pay their electricity bills because the municipalities cut them off.
Yeah.
So where is that money that the municipalities are collecting going? Because clearly between Eskom and the municipalities, someone is not knocking on the door and saying, hey, Baba, can I have my money?
Well, the municipalities, the allegations currently is that the municipalities are diverting that money for other programs.
Uh-huh.
They're not paying
instead
it over
of
to
back
Eskom.
To Eskom.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And that problem really requires a political will. Somebody must just shake up the municipalities and say, well, you're not going to get this budget for this year because you owe Eskom so much money. That money is going to Eskom.
Yeah. They're doing that with us as individuals if you don't pay. So, but they get away with not paying their bills.
The municipalities.
So it's actually quite ridiculous.
Well, you know, that's exactly it. It's sort of like what I was going to say, the corporate tax. If you look at the corporate tax, it's at, it's gone up now. And it's sitting at 18.7%, right? Whereas the personal income tax is sitting at 36.4%. So basically, if you are a normal consumer earning over half a million rands a year, your tax is at least 41%, pretty much, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got now VAT as well, which is what you're going to have to pay, customs and excise duty, fuel levies, sin taxes, because you get taxed if you go and buy a bottle of Johnny Walker, because, like, you know.
But it seems like an interesting...
E-tolls.
E-tolls as well. Because now it seems like we're dealing with, as much as it is an infrastructure issue that was built for pre-apartheid, I would say, but also dealing with a managerial issue where really the collection rate is management.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying the infrastructure is not. So I'm not too sure how much, if you had to weigh it on some sort of a scale, which way would you say 40-60 managerial infrastructure or 60-40? You know, because if we say, right, we build what is required to build, from what it sounds like, it seems like in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll find ourselves in the same pittle because the management is not quite...
Do you want to get that?
Yeah, they're two separate issues. They're absolutely two separate issues. The fact that now and then we have load shedding largely has to do with the fact that we do not have enough electricity supply from the grids that they currently have because they didn't build enough. The fact that Eskom needs money has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The fact that Eskom needs money is managerial. Yeah. Eskom was selling electricity and was not collecting the money for electricity. That's manageable. And then when Eskom wants to collect, you have a politician coming in to say, look, you can't cut these guys down because if you cut them down, there'll be service delivery.
Yeah.
And Eskom says, but these guys
have to pay.
They need to pay. Mm. And then the municipality themselves indicate, well, they've collected the money, but they're not giving the money back to Eskom. So it becomes that part is a political issue. Now, usually with an electricity, especially if you're going to generate electricity, that is good business. Almost any bank will finance that. Now, how are you going to finance somebody who doesn't collect?
Mm. Exactly.
And that's the problem.
Or can't. Yes. Because if they try, they get over basically bulldozed by the municipality. Yeah.
So the 250 billion that they need, they can raise that on the market. If only they ran
collect.
If only they ran the business properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a simple business proposition. I'm going to build this. To build this will cost so much. I'm going to sell all of this electricity over to so many people.
This is what
people.
I'll get back.
I'll get back so much, and then I'll be able to pay you.
Yeah.
But now, the problem is this. You say, I'm going to sell this to these people, but tell you what, I'm not going to collect the money at all. So I'm not going to get as much.
Sure. Which is crazy. Yes. You don't do business that way.
No.
But having said that, at the same time, our municipalities, what is really the problem there? Because if we just look at that for now, it's not like they're not getting, first of all, a lot of money coming in from government. KZN is going to get a couple of billion, followed by Gauteng, which is going to get a little bit less than KZN to spend. And then, of course, last on the list is the Northern Cape with about 10.1 billion to spend in 1 year. So they get all these billions of rands to fix the problems that they have. And they still, from the taxpayer, the rate payer, they still get all this money. But clearly there's no political will there for them to spend that money correctly.
I think that's basically really the problem. And that's why for many municipalities, you find that, and you'll see as the year goes by, there will be a team put together to try and go bail out and work out exactly what's wrong with the municipality. You recall it happened in Limpopo, where they were put basically under national management and so on. And it happened in the Eastern Cape, similarly, where they were put under national management. So it really comes down to management issues. I think as well, the major problem is that in some of these positions, people get into those positions based upon their popularity, not based upon their skills to perform the duties, because it's all elected officials. Now, if you're going to be elected official, you don't even need to go to school for that matter. And that's the problem.
Funny enough, I mean, the other day I had a chat to someone who was saying the electricity bill is just too high. it was just a random discussion, and he was saying since they've moved to prepaid, it's gone up by over 1,000% or something.
I'm also on prepaid, and it's crazy how it's actually more than double.
Do people actually have the money to pay? Because that's another discussion.
Here's an interesting thing about prepaid as well that a lot of people don't know. Prepaid now is Eskom sells the power to the municipality. The municipality then onsells it to private companies who are selling prepaid. And the private companies can then decide what rate they're going to charge you when it comes to prepaid.
Yeah, so they also take their cut.
They must also take their cut. So you must check who's your prepaid provider.
But now, the question that I wanted to ask, do we actually think that the majority of people have the money to pay? Because it's one thing for me to sell you something, but if you don't have the money nor the spend to actually purchase that.
I think that's why, as well, prepaid is becoming so popular. It's becoming popular because, heck, you don't have the money, you don't get the electricity. Whereas if you're on contract with the municipality, you basically use the electricity, then you pay them. You only find out at the end of the month when you owe it, whether you have the money.
And if you don't pay, they cut you off. It's fine.
Yes.
But when they come and put you back on, you pay to be put back on.
Exactly.
So you don't want that situation. Yeah. You pay whatever they tell you to pay you, and then you'll query it later. But actually, this brings me to my next topic that I wanted to talk about, because here is an opportunity. We, you know, last time you were here, we're talking about open tenders. I went on the website. I've become a member now, and I've gone through the website.
Yay.
Oh, thank you.
Yay.
I'm about to get a tender.
Yeah, you go, man.
I've already gone to see which Aston Martin I like.
So my first ride in a Ferrari will be with you, buddy.
Yes.
I was supposed to go the money's in the bank.
I was supposed to go to Ferrari launch today. You don't have to wait for that, Ville-Marie. Oh, that's so old-fashioned. Just go now. See if the bank will give you the loan, and then you'll see how to finish.
We're going to hook you up, my sorry. We're going to open tennis. We're going to hook you
up. But nonetheless, you know, the great thing about what you guys are doing there, with what you're talking about, for me as an entrepreneur, when I look at this, I just see opportunity. All these problems are like, here's the bucks, guys. I mean, first of all, at the moment, energy is going to be something that sooner or later legislation is going to open up where we can all be energy providers if we want to. And in fact, we can already be sort of energy providers without the legislation having to be changed, in terms of people now going solar, people going wind powered, selling generators, that sort of thing, you know?
Well, that's precisely what's happening. In fact, the legislation has opened up. There's a process called independent power producers. And right now in his budget speech, the minister indicated they're going to widen that process. There'll be hydro, there'll be coal. And basically, what they have had to resign themselves to is this. They're going to need the private sector to come to the party and build up the energy needs in order to supply to Eskom.
All right.
Which works pretty well. So they've already had in the past about three rounds of this. The major challenge has been, and this you'll find as well as an entrepreneur, in most of those rounds, most of the companies that got those opportunities were foreign European companies.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were foreign European companies. Because
they have the capital.
That's always going to be a problem.
Their skill and the capacity and so on. Mm-hmm. And so the way in which we're going to have to rig this and get it is basically through broad-based black economic empowerment.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. The thing is, though, I mean, I think maybe the legislation then has to be, we can have these European companies coming into the country, but then they have to have like a 70% South African ownership, like you would have if you went into the United States and wanted to do major business with the United States government, or you wanted to do major business with the UK government.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get so scared and we call this foreign investment. It's not foreign investment. They're not doing us a favor. It's like the e-tolls.
Yeah.
The situation we have right now, the biggest problem with the e-tolls is that we got a foreign company to come in and do the collecting, and it costs as much, if not more, to collect the money than actually what it costs you to pay, right? And then the money goes off to Austria.
Yeah.
So it's out, it's gone, before it even gets taxed and everything else. So with that sort of thing, and I think there's enough South African companies that have been doing this for long enough. There's probably somebody out there who lives in Mpumalanga or near the Lesotho border who probably knows how to make this thing happen. But we're just not considering
him. Outsource everything.
Yeah. Because we're thinking, but Koos van Rooyen, we know you guy. You're from around the corner. There is this guy who's coming in from Portugal and he's built maybe one dam somewhere and it looks really good. Or he's American. And we, you know, because he's from overseas.
Yeah. Well, look, to put together those deals as well, you think about it, almost every solar panel out there is made in China.
Mm-hmm.
So none of these European companies are in fact manufacturing that. Then you need to assemble it.
Mm-hmm.
The assembly needs those is, I mean, that is just, that's not much technical. It's much labor. You can teach somebody how to assemble that.
Okay.
So they can find all of that here. So really the work is, which the business that do, the real work is in finding the money. The work is in putting the deal together to demonstrate to the person you're looking for the money, how you're going to make your money back to pay them back. So it's largely a financial thing rather than, so if you have the financing background to be able to put a deal together, you find that you'll probably be able to do it. But then you also need to have the bank balance to demonstrate to,
so the bank balance right now, before I'm financed.
Before, of course, because banks like to give money to people with money.
Yeah.
But that's just what it
you
is.
You got to have a good, you know, mustn't look desperate and in the zero.
But that's part of the conundrum I think we're faced with, that entrepreneurs are people that would like to contribute. Out of 10, you'd find that probably one or two have got the bank balance, or the balance sheet rather.
Especially for projects this size.
Projects, even on a smaller scale. You know, the guy out there is saying, look, I want to contribute. I've got brains. I've got some solutions I can come up with. All of a sudden, where's your bank balance? Where's your balance sheet?
Yeah.
Right at the top of that business entrepreneurial chain are people sitting with those bank balances. So really, where are we headed? Because that's the same guy at the bottom of that chain who needs to pay for the electricity at the end of the day.
But here's
He's
the thing,
now unemployed.
Guys. Here's the thing. I think we forget one thing. There's funding mechanisms to cover that gap as well. There is softer money that you can get from your NEFs, your DTIs, your IDCs. Am I incorrect here? Where perhaps the capital that you need on your side is far less. It's actually sometimes anything up to zero rands in terms of collateral that you can bring in.
Well, we're hoping, but no. The IDC has a fund called the Green Fund for these kind of projects, and so does the DBSA. They have a fund as well called the Green Fund for these kind of projects. But nonetheless, they always want a bit of skin in you, and that's the case. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur and you can put together a deal without any skin, without any money of your own, man, you're pretty lucky. It hardly ever happens. And so with a deal as big as this, they will say, okay, we want 10% from you, where are you going to raise that 10%?
Well, can't you raise that? You can't raise that 10% by getting a loan now from the bank. So you got the IDC saying, we'll give you 100 million, okay, but we want 10 million from you. And this is all going to... So you're going to go and get what? Is it the gap financing? So you go to Standard Bank and say, listen, guys, I just need 10 million. Here's the deal. You'll get your money. Just give me the 10. And then they're probably going to say, maybe we'll give you the 10, but you got to give us one.
Something like that, yes.
And then with the one, you go to the Mashonisa down the road and you say, listen, my guy, just give me 1 million.
But this is interesting. I mean, if you look at the whole informal, I would say, spaza shops in Soweto, where previously 2, 3, 4 years ago, the spaza shop is empty. It's got nothing. Run by Peteni. Fast forward to 2 years, a few Pakistanis come in, a few Somalians come in. They sell everything. There's no such thing as we don't have this or that. And they're making a killing. I mean, it is probably a multi-billion rand industry.
Yeah.
So I'm also thinking to myself, perhaps, I don't know where their financing comes from. You know, that
support.
They can get looted from today and then next week they're back up and running, fully stocked. And it's obviously not from Standard Bank or FNB. So I think within our own mechanisms, there's a lack of trust to say,
I
as Peteni can give Vilmarie 1 million because I trust you.
Yeah, because like you were saying, support with them, it's very internal as well. Family, friends, that's how they make things happen.
Yeah.
But that is where the trusting comes. Yeah.
I suppose also, I mean, a lot of these guys come from Muslim countries. And in Muslim countries, you do loan, but you don't charge interest.
Apart from that, though, I think the trust factor, which
but
I don't think
it is about the honor, you know, like if I've loaned you money, you have to do the honorable thing and pay it back.
Yeah.
People will commit suicide if they can't pay back a loan.
Yeah, people just are too happy to run away.
They're just like, I can't pay you. What do you want? And you get to the house, you know, there's a new TV, there's a new car. And the guy tells you straight up, look, I can't pay. You can see I got a new TV, right? Are you expecting me to sell my wife's Louis Vuitton bag to pay you?
But do you think that these budget speeches address some of these softer issues? I mean, we talk trust, which I think has gone to almost below
That's a society thing. That's a social thing. I think that's amongst ourselves. We got to get back to having honor. If you say you're going to do something, then do it. Keep your word. It's small things. If you say, I'm going to meet you at 12 o'clock today for a meeting and you don't pitch up, how can I trust you then with 100 million rands if you can't pitch up to a meeting without even picking up the phone and saying, hey, listen, I'm not going to be able to make it. So we got to change from that level where honor is everything. If I've said this, either it must happen or I must give you a good reason well in advance why it's not going to happen.
That's an ideal, everyone wants that. But for some reason, I mean, we know what the recipe is.
We just got to live it. Every one of us has got to do our part. Yeah. Because also if you start doing it, the people around you will start realizing that you take yourself that seriously. So if someone has a meeting with you and they don't pitch up by 10 past, then you move on. And then when they pitch up, you're like, where were you? Well, I've left.
It's very true. Because, I mean, I'm speaking now from exactly what you just said now to me. So within the academy, one of the things with us, we've got competitors over the years now that's come up that everyone tries to do cheaper, better, whatever the case might be. But the thing after 10, 11 years that keeps bringing the big corporates to us to work with us is our reputation. And it's because of when I say something, I do deliver even if it ends up costing me.
Yes.
Because the long-term thing for me, that's how I feel about it. It's a principle thing.
Yes.
And it definitely 10 years, 11 years later, it's paying off big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's worth it. You know, people don't realize it, but the big guys are looking, they are desperate for trustworthy people that they can actually work with and they will put their money there.
You're right.
I think it's important. You're right. I mean, to build a brand. A brand is ourselves, a brand of trust. You can build a brand of trust as a corporate, you build a brand of trust as a nation, we build a brand of trust as people. You were talking about what happens in Somalia. You know, in my previous life, I used to work for the Department of International Relations, and I used to manage, in fact, that part portfolio with Somalians. And what they will do is, a Somali guy will arrive in South Africa, he arrives with nothing. All he does is just find where other Somalis are, and then he says, I've just arrived, I have nothing.
Yeah, but help me.
But I just came, found a corner here, I could put up a shop. Can you help me? And no questions asked, they give him the money. Here, go set up a shop. When you have the money, pay back. And what usually will happen is, that's exactly what happens. They start a shop and they pay him back. And that's what happens.
That's amazing, because that's support.
That's incredible.
That's real support. That's exactly it. But, you know, I think we're going to be talking to David Gower just now. Okay. Before we go to a musical break and come back with David, one last thing. Maybe you can help us with this. As with what you guys are doing right now, when it comes to what we're talking about, you don't have to start with the biggest deal on the table.
No.
It's usually, in fact, like anything else, progress at a pace that is comfortable and start slowly. So maybe if you want to get into energy, start with delivering 10 solar geysers.
Yeah.
Make that work. Then go to 100. Then go to 1,000. Then get a power station.
In fact, what we're doing at Open Tenders is precisely that. We're focusing on small and medium enterprises. And government now has started as well to say, look, in terms of the energy space, we need as well to have to unbundle that. Instead of putting out massive kilowatts of requirements, they can do maybe smaller, 1 megawatt that they want. And that you can find, even if you're a small, medium enterprise, you can be able to bid for that and be able to successful with that. And that we're going to be posting on our site.
Awesome.
One last question.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick one. I mean,
I want to listen to the song.
I mean, the layered costs from production to when Eskom buys. I mean, you've got your coal company that will produce, let's say, 60 or 80 rands per ton, and then Eskom pays an exorbitant amount.
Yeah.
Where is that headed? I mean, you're finding people that are just making a killing from what I don't think is much value add. Even intermediaries come into that space and become overnight millionaires.
You mean the coal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a necessary business. Because one, Eskom needs the coal. Two, most of the mines that had coals were under before with people who how should I call it? Advantaged people. And so what Eskom has come up to say is this. We will be buying only from mines that are 51% black owned.
Yeah.
Now, to do those transactions, of course, there are costs to those specific mines. But Eskom as well has the power to indicate how much they're willing to pay because they know what's the general price out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think the fact that they've made that statement that if you want to sell to us, you must be 51% black owned is good for us black entrepreneurs. Because otherwise, how are we going to get to these kind of businesses.
Yeah.
So for me, I have no problem with guys coming in and becoming millionaires. I think more black people need to be millionaires.
No, for sure, yeah. for sure.
All right, well, we'll come back and speak to one millionaire that I know personally, David Gao, and talk about how he's doing in the media industry. In the meantime, here's Juicy J with It's All About the Money. Yeah, that's right. That's Juicy J. Jesse J. Am
Juicy
I correct? Jesse J, not Juicy J. And it's all about the money. In fact, talking about all the money, or being all about the money, tell me what you're up to at the moment, Vilmarie.
In terms of money?
Yes.
Are we talking vacancies?
We're talking jobs. Money. You have an opportunity that you want to give to the people who are listening right now.
Yeah,
you want to give money away.
Part of the trust issue or the trust thing that we have with a corporate now that I spoke about earlier is they've asked us, they have 25 vacancies, jobs available for employment next week. And they've asked us to find these people.
Okay.
So we have an opportunity for guys who, delivery guys, who can do delivery service because it's with a very big corporate.
McDonald's.
It's. I mean, they're a stunning company. They are desperate for delivery riders. So we have the opportunity to recruit them and then to train them
up and then help them get that employment, right?
Yes.
25 riders.
Yeah.
So by the end of March, you would have basically helped 25 people
find a job,
a decent living. Yeah.
But by the end of next week, they're employed. So, so this thing is like came on quite quickly. We have the jobs available now, so we need the guys to. If anyone's interested, you just have to have a learner's for that's kind of the criteria at the moment.
A learner's in terms of riding or driving
bike. It doesn't help with car because we need you learners with the bike.
All right.
And then, we need to know who's interested probably by the end of today. And then by Monday, we can do interviews.
So how can they contact you?
I think the best would be, I'm going to give the number as well as an email address. But the number is 084-443-8053. So that's the office number. So you can also SMS if you can't phone, just SMS, we'll phone you back. And if you have email, you can send to info@sqracing.co.za.
Is it possible for them to hit you up via Twitter as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So
SA Speed Queen.
At SA Speed Queen, just make sure that you hit up on that. In fact, we're going to put it out on
Twitter
right now. Yeah. You're going to mention me and then I'll also send it to my people.
Yeah. they are a nice company to work for. You know, they give a good basic. They give medical aid, which is great for a job like this.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then and you guys earn tips as well, which is normally quite good. And they give them everything. And what's nice within the company I see is that they give opportunities to quickly upgrade and work into, other positions.
You don't
positions.
Have to have your own bike.
No, they give it.
They give the bike
They give
as well.
Everything. Okay. They're just asking for guys who has a learners and who's willing to learn. And we do the rest. Okay. And then they employ.
Okay. Fantastic. Excellent. So we're going to talk about that once again at the end of the show. But in the meantime, don't forget to hit us up on Twitter. We're going to do that right away. Let's talk about something a little bit easier on the ear. I mean, the cricket today. How well did we do? Isn't it amazing?
I thought Oscars.
Hey,
that's
Oscar.
Easy on the ear. No, not him.
Well, we are going to talk about the Oscars as well as the cricket.
Nice dresses.
They were very nice dresses. Okay, but can we just get back to the cricket? Because we just won by how many? 257 runs South Africa won by.
Fantastic victory, eh?
With people like Chris Gayle in the West Indian team, and we just annihilated them on that wicket, eh?
But what's fascinating, I mean, in the first 10 overs, I think we're just 40 runs for one. So we're going at like... We're four runs in the over, and then with like 10 overs left, we scored like 150 or 160 runs.
That was AB.
AB. So, I mean, his capacity to accelerate is quite incredible.
Well, let's talk about the Oscars then. Neil Patrick Harris, Doogie Howser. He's a man now.
Huh? You're talking about guys now. I'm thinking girls' dresses.
Well, the guy who hosted it, okay, he was there the whole night.
But do you think he's funny?
I thought he was very good. I think he's very talented. And in fact, we've got Mona BC on the line. BC!
Hello!
How are you doing?
Hello, my good people.
Hey, BC.
All right.
Hey. Why can't
you,
I hear him?
Don't get too comfortable there,
Pet. Hey! No, I see you've moved on to Kaya. The other day I heard them interview you. Great interview, just by the way.
Thank
and at the
you,
end,
brother.
I heard
you
applying
thank
for
you,
a job.
You're going to have to speak louder, BC.
Thank you,
Petini.
So, what?
Hello,
Macy. Hello,
but Mokiani Kop.
Design in Daba.
Oh yeah. How's that going, man?
It keeps on buzzing, man. Last night we had supper with Ravi. That's the guy who founded the Design in Daba, and very interesting guy. And we met a lot of online people that I suppose we'd. Definitely chat to you on Cliff Central, and I'm also meeting up with the Cliff Central team at Design in Daba a bit later on. So
awesome.
Cape Town is exciting.
You know I was in Cape Town last night, right? You know I was in Cape Town because I told you I was coming back today. Why didn't you tell me you were in Cape Town yesterday? I thought you were only leaving this morning.
He sees too much of you.
We had a wild night last night, man. You should have called me.
Were you at that sideline place?
No, I was at another place. It was a place of ill repute with a good reputation.
You must have been at the boring party because ours was hip and happening.
Oh, no. We weren't with the beautiful people. We were just with the other people.
The masses. That's name your problem. Dropping, you hang around too many masses.
But anyway, I'm digging your handle on Twitter for Black. Monwabisi Tete. Catch Monwabisi tonight on CNBC Africa DSTV channel. Looking like a media mogul there. When was that happening?
Listen, man. it helps having a new team of youngsters running your social media. Hey, they make you really look good. But
actually, we're talking about employment right now. So there you go. I mean, the thing is, it's good to have young blood coming in and just give them a chance, give them a work.
Yeah, and they're proving themselves. You know, funny enough, like I was expecting the worst, to be honest, and. I see them being in a phenomenal job, so I hear, you know.
Why were you expecting the worst?
You know me, it's not about me, but it's about the company. So I kind of shy away from the media element of it. But yeah, man, employment is a big thing. I've been listening to you guys, and I love what you guys are talking about as well. So Marie, I've got my learners, so please let me know when I can go in and apply for the job.
That would be amazing, dude. Like, you can like actually deliver McDonald's in a suit. I would give you a good tip. I'd give you $10 at least $10.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, I'd be the best delivery person in the country, hey?
Yeah, no, you'd be
amazing.
You
actually would make
sure.
some good money, I think.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Bulman. Thank you.
But being nice to you today, BC. I don't know. Is it like Christmas? Is it your birthday? What's happening?
No, South Africa won. I think we're all in a happy space.
I think
when
so.
When David de Villiers plays like that, like Kateni was saying, you know, it's massive for the country. You know, I was scared at some stage. I thought, oh no, here we go again. The chokers are at it. Might as well eat McDonald's and choke myself to death as well.
Nice. Thanks, BC. Just ruined that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sound very mellow, eh? What are you up to? Sounding like you're at
the
beach, shorts.
Now. No.
Having,
hey?
He's in a Cape Town state of mind.
Wearing flops and, you know, hey, bro, let's hit the beach. No, guys, but I'm loving the show, and I just thought I'd just, you know, say love you guys.
All right, Beast, thanks for calling in, man. When are you coming back?
I'll be back tomorrow. So we're back up on next week and looking forward to you guys. You guys. Love you guys.
Hey, come back soon. By the way, hey, unga coach, because Umama Zala is here and I forgot. You know, she wants her water from the sea and just put in a little bit of sand this time.
Yes.
She just wants, just get a 2 liter Coke bottle from it. Just a 2 liter Coke bottle, a little bit of sand at the bottom, and then you know how to do with the beach water, you know, the sea water. I need it, man. It's gapping time for the whole week.
What is it about that? What really?
It's too palaza. All right, Beast. Later, man. Enjoy it.
Cheers, guys. I'll be looking further on the show.
Sure.
Bye.
Okay, you want me to explain?
Yes, please.
You want me to explain? Okay, we got David Gao on the line. So I will explain, and then we'll get on to David. David, how are you doing, buddy?
Man, let me apologize first. I'm supposed to be in the studio, and my life is literally running away with me.
Okay. Is it because your show's coming up soon?
No, I'm shooting my TV show, David Gao's House.
Mm-hmm.
So my plan was to come there in my lunch break.
But production got away with you.
No, I needed to pick up cars from Chevrolet, which is not far from my house.
Mm-hmm.
So then someone must drop me off, and then I must sign for the cars, and then I must drive. And then next thing I get a call that, are you outside? Are you here? You know?
So is comedians making enough money? Doesn't sound like it. Hey.
Doesn't
you
sound
need
like
a
it.
Chauffeur, yeah.
But, What's enough?
But I think, David, you are one of the most successful, in terms of money, in money terms, comedians in Africa.
I hope so.
According to what they
enough,
said at SARS.
Yeah. Enough should be a chauffeur,
no,
so
you
don't
what?
Have to do all that.
There's circles. I make my own money. You know, nobody calls and gives me gigs red.
Uh-huh.
So everything I'm doing, I'm either putting it up or paying for it or putting it together.
Actually, that's the thing, you know. How did you start that, Dave? I mean, a lot of people who want to get into any sort of entertainment industry vibe are always waiting for someone to give them a shot. But you went into it and you started your own line of gigs, Blacks Only, for example.
Yeah, so for me, it just has to do, the only job I've ever had, I used to work at reception when I was in UCT at my rest in Clarendon House.
Okay.
I worked at reception when I was still studying drama at UCT. And then pretty much I've never had a 9-to-5 job since I left UCT.
Wow. And elaborate on that. Okay, so obviously having the drama degree helped somewhat, but you know what they say about a drama degree? The difference between that and a pizza is that at least a pizza can feed a family of four. But I think you've done much better than that, Dave. What was it that you had in you that gave you that entrepreneurial spirit?
So, you must remember, you must remember the drama, the actual drama. For instance, I was in drama school for 3 years, and then to graduate, I had to write a one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that one-man show, someone booked me for a stand-up comedy festival.
Mm-hmm.
The Cape Town Comedy Festival, or then the Smirnoff International Comedy Festival, which was October 1998. And that's when I started doing stand-up. But the show that I was in was the first stand-up comedy show that I'd ever been to in my life.
Oh, so from this is the first one you're going to see, and you're performing in it, and you're not even a comedian. You're a Shakespeare guy.
I was not
guy.
Even a comedian. I would, based on the one-man show that I did, which I guess people thought was funny, I took like a bit out of it, you know, like a 10, 15-minute bit, which I would perform at the festival. But the people would laugh, I'd wait, and I'd carry on exactly where I left off. And then I kind of learned and started talking to the audience and picking up and pretty much coming up with other material. So that's really how I started out. But because already I kind of had a show that I'd written to graduate out of drama school, that already meant I have some sort of 60-minute of a show.
Mm-hmm.
Then the same producer put me up in Grahamstown in 1999. There were shows, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6, 8, 10, me, 2 o'clock, Al Porges, Mark Banks, John Flesmas, Martin Davis from the UK. I had 6 people in a 200-seater.
Wow.
And I would do an hour. I didn't even have a mic.
Wow. And that was baptism by fire.
Mark Banks would have like people standing in the same venue. Dream Fleshmas would be sold out. And then the next day, come back again, I have like 7 people for 2 weeks. You know, eventually I ended up with about 40 people.
And you know, with theater, you can only not do the show or cancel the show if there are less audience members than there are cast. So in a one-man show, you can't cancel. If there's 3 people, you're doing the show, buddy.
Listen, those 6 people, there was one black guy that walked out, literally threw hands and went into the bar in the middle of my show.
Oh, wow. That must have kept you going.
How's that for rejection?
So, you know, from then, and then in 2004, I said to my manager and business partner, Roddy Quinn and King Mary Real Concerts, I said, I want to do a show for black people, you know, and I said, let's do a show called Black Song, because we're ripping off apartheid and apartheid, Swartes Net and Blankets Net and all those.
Uh-huh,
even
uh-huh.
The first ever Black Song poster, you know, had that sign that used to have those Swartes Net or Blankets Net signs behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the idea was really that I wanted to do material that I could do to black people, or at least people that speak other language other than English.
Yeah.
And that then any other comedian who wanted to perform in any other language other than English, this
he could perform.
Be the platform to do that. Yeah.
So from those humble beginnings, you've got another show happening now tomorrow, is it? 28th of March at
Emperor's
Palace.
Tomorrow,
28th February. Yeah.
We've done Black Song Leader, I think, 9 out of the now 11 years.
Wow. And what kind of numbers are we talking here, Dev? How many people are coming to the shows these days?
Just over 3,000, depending on how you configure the venue and also safety measures and et cetera, et cetera. You know, sometimes we go quite big on the production.
Mm.
But tomorrow is going to be amazing. I'm delivering the State of the Joke, and I'm hoping I won't be interrupted.
The state of the jokes.
Well,
you never know. There might be some people.
I can't guarantee that I won't be interrupted.
Do you have to give back any money? Is there any money you have to give back?
Look, there's allegations of comedians who are saying I haven't paid them for the last gig, or I owe them money, or whatever. So I'm hoping they don't interrupt the show and start demanding money.
Don't wear red.
As far as I know, I'm just delivering a State of the Jokes address.
Okay.
And everything should go according to plan. And there's an amazing dance movie coming out today in South Africa called Hear Me Move. So
that's right.
Some of the cast members that are going to do a bit of a dance thing from the movie.
Man, that sounds amazing.
This is Bondplay.
Are there still tickets available? Because last time I tried to get a ticket on a Thursday night for a Saturday night show, I couldn't get it. Are there still tickets available? I know you guys always sold out.
Well, there were tickets still available yesterday. I haven't checked today.
Where can the people get the tickets? At CompuTicket?
CompuTicket, to be honest, is really ShopRite Checkers. You go inside, there's like a...
Okay, so ShopRite Checkers.
There's like a counter where people buy Lotto and pay bills.
Okay. Well, people know where CompuTicket is.
It confuses people if you keep saying CompuTicket. I think people literally go and look for CompuTicket.
Okay.
Or like
so they must just go to ShopRite Checkers. At the Lotto kiosk is where CompuTicket is. Otherwise, you can also go online, CompuTicket online. You can buy them there.
.com.
CompuTicket.com.
Yeah.
Register and you can buy.
And then you can pick up the tickets at the venue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great.
But before you go, David, we're going to wrap up. Another exciting thing that you're doing when it comes to, in terms of turning this show into business, is you're also a movie producer. You've produced a couple of films, and your last one was, there was Taxi 2, as well as, was it The Dined Room? Or the room divider.
The room divider.
The room divider.
The dining room would work as same.
The dining room,
really takes place in a dining room in front of a room divider.
Yeah. The dining room, which is actually the TV room, which is actually like the lounge. Like the dining room. Okay.
So, yeah, so we made Taxi Ride, then we made a five-part series, then we made The Room Divider, and now we've made Shampoo's Retirement Village. And in June, I should be on set with one of the biggest actors in Hollywood from South Africa.
Really? I wasn't called for that.
British, fire.
Who?
And shooting and making another movie, much, much bigger budget, a little, way more than I've been making the movies for. So it should be a better movie.
Okay. Are you at liberty to tell us who this big actor is? Because clearly it's not me. I
can't.
Didn't have the call. Oh, okay, you're still negotiating. It's okay. I'm still available, Dave, in June.
I'm going to just literally sign on the dotted line and then I'm going to make noise. I'm going to have a press conference in Cannes, hopefully. That's my plan.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best because we like to see that kind of success. I mean, from the Pure Monati show, and we know that the SABC still has all your intellectual property on that one, to making...
But that won't happen anymore. That's why David Carl's house is the license to StarFed, which used to be Top TV, and I can put it on YouTube and I can sell it to other networks and I can make money for the rest of my life.
Yes. And it's actually happening at your house, then Kailami. How are the neighbors feeling about that?
The neighbors, you must remember my job. Everyone else is at work. Only the domestic workers. I mean, people, you can just invite them to a dry or let them play with your children. Or let your children they're watching play with your children's toys.
So okay.
Then you are all fine.
Okay. I think that's a good business plan, actually.
It is.
All right, Dave.
And then do your thing.
Thanks for talking to us, man. We got to get out of here. But hopefully we'll still have you in the studio because we want to do a sort of, if you will, a film and television industry show one of these days. So we'd love to have you back and all the best, eh?
I'm the guy to call because I know exactly who to bring.
All right. Cool stuff, man. See you at the show tomorrow.
Yeah, man.
Later.
In fact, some of the people will be there more than I would be.
Okay. Dave, I'm going to say goodbye. Ciao.
Ciao. Cheers.
All right, guys. So we're about to go. Any last words before we go? Mr. Kuzwai. In fact, let's start with the ladies first. Beautiful lady.
Oscar.
He's in jail.
He's in jail.
Tell
us about the dress and then tell us one more time about that McDonald's thing that you're doing.
I think the McDonald's thing is, if anyone missed it, there's 25 jobs available. With McDonald's, we are recruiting, so you guys can send us an SMS or phone us on 084-443-8053. We'll do the training, we'll give all the detail on it. But we're talking about money. Here's an opportunity for people to earn.
Okay, cool.
To get a job. Bet.
Super. Yeah, I'm running my first race this coming Sunday, my first marathon this year. And as always, people can catch me at runforwealth.com.
Awesome. Super. Well, good luck for that. Goodness, I can't run with this.
Well, we're out of here. Sivu, Smarty, anything?
Well,
OpenTenders.
OpenTenders.com. You're looking for business opportunities? Go to OpenTenders.com.
Go to the specialists. I've already registered and I'm going to be rich in no time. All right, we're out of here. This is Black Life, baby. Bye-bye.